You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 31st of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you today?
Good evening, Sven. I'm feeling a lot better than what I have been doing.
Yeah. I haven't heard from you this week, and you said you haven't been feeling too good, but thankfully you're here tonight for the show tonight, and that is what matters. And I think you've also got some really interesting content for us tonight as well. Some really challenging content, I would say.
I was going to say challenging, yeah, because if it wasn't for the secret Masonic victory, a lot of this I couldn't have been able to answer straight off. So that is interesting.
Well, I would have difficulties answering it anyway. I mean, this is very, very specialist knowledge that this person is sort of hurling at you while trying to debunk you. Very specialist knowledge. Yeah. I would say. And basically what we've got somebody calling themselves Jason Saunders, and he's trying to debunk The Greatest Story Never Told. What do you know about this Jason Saunders, Dennis?
Nothing.
Is he a YouTuber?
Sorry?
Is he a YouTuber or what is he?
Well, it's the first time I've heard him. He's obviously a YouTuber because he left his comments on the YouTube channel, but I wouldn't have noticed him unless I went into the comment section, which I did today, inside my channel, which shows all my comments up, but it doesn't always show them on the outside. You know, I don't get the notifications all the time. But this was a series of, I suppose it's not questions, he's trying to debunk the actual documentary. So I managed to copy him down and get him over to him and say, let's have a go then.
So it's not a video that he's made. It's a series of comments. No. Because I was unable to see the comments. I guess because whatever video it was under it must be banned in Britain. I guess
this was. It probably is. Yeah, I mean, most of them are, aren't they? But I think the video was actually the debunking of The Greatest Story Never Told not being a documentary, which obviously I think it was at the time it was third popular in Germany. He's left his comments under this particular video.
So the video itself is trying to debunk the documentary and they banned it?
No, the video is trying to prove that it is a documentary when people were saying this isn't really a documentary. Right. In fact, it's more than a documentary, to be honest. It's a life changer.
Right, because I was just wondering there whether they, you know, they just banned it just because it's got Greatest Story Never Told in it, even though it's a video that's, you know, sort of anti it.
Who knows? I got a strike this week, and I didn't even question it, you know, because what's the point? And so I have no idea why they struck me, but apparently they've said, you know, can't upload for a week or two, something like that. I never even questioned it. What's the point?
Well, I mean, with Facebook now, I mean, it all depends on whether you're talking positively about somebody or negatively about somebody. If you mention Tommy Robinson's name and you're being positive, that's an instant ban. It's instant censorship. If you mention his name and you're being negative about him, that's absolutely fine. I mean, it's so blatantly political. I missed what you said there, Dennis.
What if you mentioned Dennis Wise?
Well, this is it. I mean, I don't know whether have they banned you from Facebook?
They banned me after 2 weeks, and I only posted.
I should imagine it. It's probably the same thing for yourself now. Yeah, it's everyone, and partially also what they're doing is redirecting people that search for politically incorrect content, and they're redirecting people to communist websites that are supposed to debunk it. So it's blatantly weighted towards the opposition, basically.
Well, I noticed The Greatest Story Never Told in full is on BitChute, and it's on archive.org if people are wondering how to get hold of it, because one or two people have been asking, saying they can't find it anywhere.
Well, that's great that it's available on BitChute. that seems to be the main alternative that people are using, I think.
Yeah, the only trouble is I can't get the sound. I don't know why. On any video I go on, I just can't get the sound. Granted, I haven't signed in, you know, but I should still be able to hear it.
Yeah, maybe there's something up with the mute button or something there that's not very easily visible.
Tried all sorts.
The issue I would have with BitChute is that, you know, it's difficult to download from there. But I think, I may be wrong, I think there's an ability to do that now. Because I like to make audio copies of anything that's on YouTube so that I've got an MP3 of it. And yeah, then I can just listen to it without having to sit there and watch it. I can do other things. So it'd be handy if that's available for it.
Well, the actual company based in England.
BitChute is based in England.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. British innovation. We're all for that. Yeah. Well, let's get into some of these claims that Jason Saunders makes, and we've broken them all up there into each one. And as I say, I mean, this is specialist stuff, and I probably know something about one or two of them, but the rest of them are sort of, you know, it's beyond my confidence, I would suggest. The first one, he says, Germany, the would-be victor, was screwed over at the end of World War I by the Treaty of Versailles. She was also stabbed in the back by her own people, mostly Jews. And this is supposed to be a quote from Greatest Story Ever Told, either a quote or he's summarizing things. And he has fact number one, and these are all facts that are supposed to disprove this. The German Empire declared war on Russia and not the other way around. So what would you have to say to that allegation?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say to his quoting of the Germany would be the victor, etc. He never mentions the food blockade forced on Germany to actually sign that treaty. Granted, that wasn't in the greatest story ever told. I only found that out later in the Masonic Victory, but that is a fact. They were starved for a year to come to the table. And when you say the German Empire declared war on Russia, not the other way around, I can't remember me ever saying that.
I think what he's trying to say there is Germany was going to be the winner, but Germany was screwed over. And I think what he's trying to say is that Germany deserved the Versailles Treaty and the reparations because Germany was the one that started the war. So I think that's the accusation that he's trying to make. But if you, as you say, Germany was under a food blockade, so Germany was definitely screwed over. You know, it wasn't a fair treaty there. And in actual fact, where he says that the German Empire declared war on Russia and not the other way around, actually in fact four, he claims that Russia was actually mobilising for war before it was declared upon her by Germany. So well, whether Germany went to war or not, you know, Russia was going to attack Germany, and that's according to his own logic.
Yeah. Historically, they have always backed Serbia. That's historically known. And the fact that they were mobilising is not so much just, as he calls it, merely mobilising. When you're mobilising, it's an act of aggression for war. I don't know many countries where I haven't mobilised, where I haven't gone to war, to be honest. So he kind of makes light of that. And the fact that Germany were allies of Austria and knew that Russia were going to come in, that was the reason they declared war on Russia, because Russia was going to come in.
Yeah, mobilisation is, that's tantamount to declaring war, isn't it? I mean, if you don't do anything about that, you can be invaded, attacked.
Exactly.
Fact number two, the German Empire declared war on France and not the other way around. So what's your response to that?
Well, say again, I can't remember saying that anyway. If anything about World War One in the documentary, it's a British documentary, which is doing most of the talking, where I took most of the footage from. So it isn't me talking, it's the actual person doing the British documentary.
So what you're saying is Germany weren't, you know, it was unfair that Germany was forced to pay all these reparations, forced to accept guilt for starting the war. And he's trying to disprove that. He's trying to disprove that by saying that you know, Germany declared war on these countries. So how would you justify by saying that Germany should not have been made to pay all these reparations and accused of being the cause of the war?
Well, the only way you can justify it is if all the other countries were also suffering the same, who were defeated, like Austria and all the others. But it was only Germany who didn't start the war. They just came, you know, to help an ally who was involved in a war, you know, but they were the ones who carried all the reparations. That in itself is an injustice.
That's a good point. I would suggest people check out carolynyeager.net because she's been doing a lot of research into World War One and the cause of it. And she's of the opinion that it was Britain and America that wanted war with Germany, the same as the Second World War. And I couldn't tell you the exact ins and outs of it, but I think she does a good job of showing that by looking at these this magazine, Fatherland magazine. So if people want to find out, you know, just why Germany wasn't really guilty of starting this war, that would be a good place to start. Well, that sort of cancels out fact number three as well, because his fact number three is the German Empire marched through Belgium and brought Britain into the war. So he's claiming that Britain was forced into it.
Britain did have a treaty. I'm not convinced that was a real reason, though. But they did have a treaty. It was the Treaty of London, because they were supposed to be neutral, and Britain said they'd protect them if they were ever invaded.
So they had a similar treaty with Belgium like they had with Poland in the Second War?
Yeah, it seems like they had a treaty with a few of these countries, because if you look at the number of countries involved in that war, a lot of them countries would have been taken over by the Empire as well.
Taken over by the German Empire?
No, sorry, the British Empire.
Taken over by the British Empire. Because he's talking about the German Empire here. He says, fact number four, Austria-Hungary wanted to avenge the Archduke Franz Ferdinand's assassination by Gavrilo Princip and punish Serbia, and hoped Germany would shield her from a Russian invasion. But Germany's aforementioned actions did not help here in the slightest, as Russia was merely mobilizing before war was declared upon her by Germany. So what's he sort of trying to get across there, do you think?
Well, he's trying to say that Germany instigated the fact that Russia got involved, because he said they were only merely mobilising. They hadn't actually declared war as yet. But as we just spoke about, them mobilising means we're prepared for war. And plus the fact that he mentions Princip, this Gavrilo Princip, who was assassinated Franz Ferdinand. He was a member of the secret society, the Black Hand, which was a Masonic society, and was instigating again, you know, the war down in the Balkans.
So you've got an act that was deliberately calculated to start a war, basically, this assassination.
Yeah, what happened in actual fact is they missed the first chance. I think it was three of them. They missed the first chance, and only by chance on the way back from where the Duke was going, he was travelling, he took a different direction and passed this guy who took full advantage then. Otherwise, it would have been a failure. Such is fate.
Rather unfortunate. Fact number five, Germany had plans to back Mexico in regaining her territories lost to the US. So I guess what he's trying to do there is justify, you know, this is why America had to come into the war, I guess. It's because Germany is going to back Mexico.
Yeah, he says a number of things about that, but in this particular quote or question, I had heard that Germany would help Mexico, and I think that stems from the fact that Mexico lost a lot of land, was robbed of a lot of land by Texas, and Texas, as I found out again in Secret Masonic Victory, was a Masonic state. The star of Texas is Pentagon, and they did either steal land or robbed them, underpaid them for certain land, which Mexico were never happy about. With the Masonic thing there, Ludendorff did write a book condemning Freemasonry, and just the Nazis and Hitler. Ludendorff himself wrote a book about it, so there is a connection there, where Freemasonry is coming into this again.
Right. And fact number six, I can add a little bit to this. He says, fact number six, Germany sank the Lusitania and as a result of the latter two also drew the United States into war. Therefore, for Austria, worst ally ever. Now, the Lusitania was loaded up with weapons. It was loaded up with munitions, which was completely illegal. And Germany knew that America was sending passenger ships to Europe loaded up with munitions and had taken out all these advertisements in the American newspapers saying, this is completely illegal. We know that you are doing this. And if this ship tries to break through the barrier that they had like a barrier, then it is a legitimate target and we will be firing upon it. And that's what happened. And America had the warning. And the passengers were still told, it's perfectly fine, you can just get on this boat and you'll be safe taking you to Britain. And they knew that the boat was going to get shot, and they did it deliberately to try and get support for America going into the war. And what could Germany do? If Germany hadn't fired upon them, all those munitions would have killed thousands of German soldiers. And it was a legitimate target, and it was put across as if it wasn't.
It was an excuse. The reason we know now was the Balfour Agreement.
And we know it was filled with munitions as well because of the reports of what happened once it was hit. I think it was hit with one torpedo, which normally, I mean, what they would do is, I think it was a U-boat that hit it, they would hit their target with one torpedo at a specific part of the boat so that it keeled over and it didn't sink straight away. It would keel over and the passengers would be able to get into their lifeboats and then they would be able to be rescued and you would be able to save all the people and just destroy the ship. So they hit it with one torpedo. And what happened? All this dynamite went off. All these bombs went off. It was like a huge, great firework display and the Lusitania sunk within seconds, minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Proving that it was loaded up with munitions when America was supposed to be neutral and America was arming Germany's enemies.
Well, America's always supposed to be neutral, I suppose.
Yeah, right. So this fact number six, we can completely nullify that one. I mean, that's a war crime in itself, loading up a passenger ship with munitions.
Send them into a war zone. He tried it in the Second World War. Again, a ship that was sunk, but this time they didn't buy it. You know what I mean? The world didn't buy it.
Which one was that?
I can't remember the ship, but in one of the episodes I did, it showed how desperate Roosevelt was to get in the war. And he did try the same trick.
Fact number seven. Around 100,000 Jews joined Imperial Germany's armed forces. 320,000 Jews joined the Austro-Hungarian armed forces, and 12,000 Jewish soldiers died fighting for Germany in World War One. The Iron Cross was awarded to 18,000 German Jews in World War One. Austria-Hungary's military forces had an even higher Jewish death toll, 40,000. Now, I'm not really sure what he's hoping to put across there, because there were Jews that fought in the Second World War for Germany as well.
Yeah, exactly. And Jews were behind that, Jewish bankers. So it really proves nothing, only that there were some other Jews who didn't go fighting and caused strikes, etc., to stab Germany in the back.
And that's not a very high death toll, 40,000. You think of the millions of Germans.
Every time in World War One.
That died. And also, I mean, what he's calling Jews here, they're Mischlings. They're half Jews and quarter Jews. Yeah. That have been ostracized from the other Jews, probably because they've got, you know, Jewish fathers but German mothers, so they don't really fit in with the Jewish community. So they've decided they've decided they're going to support their country. That doesn't disprove the fact that it was organized Jewish groups, communism, that stabbed Germany in the back. I mean, that doesn't disprove that at all. What it does prove, I mean, really, as we say, in the Second World War, it was the same, and that just proves that Hitler wasn't just after Jews for being Jews. He was after communists and subversives and people that were patriotic, who happened to have a bit of Jewish blood. You know, nothing was done to them at all.
That's right.
and they fought in the war. He says, all these facts are the reasons historians conclude that Germany was an aggressor instead of a victim during World War One, and that the majority of Jews involved in the war fought and bled for her, rather than Dennis Wise and his revisionist buddies claim that Jews as a whole were disloyal to Germany, Austro-Hungary, and tried to bring about their defeat. So what's your response to that?
Well, it's like we said, some Jews did fight, some Jews didn't. The Jews that didn't wanted to bring Germany down. What's his point?
And it was Jews that were striking and causing strikes, and it was also that Jew in America, wasn't it? I forget his name, that did the Palestinian plan with Britain and said, if you sign this declaration, the Balfour Declaration, then we'll bring in America. Us Jews will bring in America yeah. on the side of Britain, sure. and then you'll win the war.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fact there. Yeah, well, that's, you know, that is Jews stabbing Germany in the back, isn't it?
Exactly.
And as I say, you got all these strikes that went off, and they stopped making munitions in the factories, and they were sowing pacifism among the German people and saying they shouldn't be at war. And these were the Jews that were in Germany while the Germans were fighting on the battlefields.
Well, somebody said to me in a YouTube comment not long back, he didn't believe all this about the Balfour Agreement, said this, you know, it's all conspiracy theory. And I pointed him to a YouTube video by Rothschild himself, who has that agreement in his own place, his house, and was showing it to an interviewer and talking about how wonderful it was that all this came about. And he just described exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think it's a fact. It's an accepted fact. I mean, that why else would you be handing over Palestine to a representative of the Jews and saying, well, you can have this country for yourself? Well, obviously, there was something in it for the person that was handing Palestine over. Lord Balfour. Or something in it for Britain. Claim number two. Jewish elements tried to overthrow the German government via communist revolution in 1918, the November Revolution. And he says, let us first remind ourselves that these revisionists pointing out how utterly traitorous an attempted coup d'etat is are the ones defending Hitler, who, however, tried to do just this, i.e. overthrow the government in Bavaria in November 1923, the Beer Hall Putsch, and was jailed as a result. Hypocrite, much. What's with November's and attempted coups anyway? Remember the 5th of November, Guy Fawkes Night, November the 5th, 1605. Well, I mean, Hitler failed at that attempt, and because he failed at that attempt, he decided that, you know, the way to go about doing this was completely legally and get votes and do it democratically, which he did, and he won by a landslide. And this coup d'etat, I mean, it didn't massacre loads and loads of people. The people that ended up being shot were the National Socialists, some of the National Socialists. And he did his time for it. And I don't think... go on.
If you're talking about communist revolution, I don't even know why I brought that up.
Well, no, he's talking about... He's just saying that it's hypocritical of... us to say coup d'etats and communist revolutions are wrong because Hitler tried, you know, the Beer Hall Putsch. I think that's what he's saying.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's no excuse, you know. I mean, Hitler had his reasons and the communists had their reasons. And they were totally different reasons. I mean, Bolshevism in Germany at that time was looked on no different to Judaism. You know, it meant the same thing to Germans.
Bolshevism and Judaism, I understand that. I mean, that was pretty much the same throughout the world, but Bolshevism was looked upon as the same as Judaism. But the point is that, I mean, Hitler failed with the Beer Hall Putsch and then turned to democratic means, and the communists have never changed. I mean, they didn't fail in their, you know, their communist attempt at a push and then decide to go the democratic route, did they? They continued doing the same thing in, you know, every country that they came across, and continued trying to do the same thing in Germany after the first communist republic or whatever it was they had.
That's true.
They didn't learn their lesson. He says, the November Revolution in 1918 was not started by Jews, but by a German sailor mutiny called the Kiel Mutiny. This snowballed into a nationwide revolution that resulted in the Kaiser abdicating and handing over power to the Social Democrats, who in turn were to be overthrown by communists, but this failed. The leader of the latter was Karl Liebknecht, and he was not a Jew, no matter how many dumb right-wing sites claim, without a source, to say otherwise. In any case, the November Revolution did not claim many lives at all, compared to actual bloody revolutions like the French or Russian revolutions. So there's a few bits here. I mean, Karl Liebknecht, I mean, I've always thought he was a Jew.
Well, you know, people who say we're a Jew never give a source anyway. So the same argument goes there. I mean, Liebknecht is, to me, a German Jewish name.
That's the thing.
Go on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's a Jewish name. It's like Apfelbaum or Shlomo. Exactly. Liebknecht is a Jewish name.
Yeah. Well, even if he wasn't Jewish, he fails to mention his co-op is Rosenberg, who was Jewish by a daughter of a Polish family. And at that time, communists were mainly Jews. There's the odd exception, but mainly Jews. This is understood.
And didn't they have some success? I thought they had like a communist area there. They had a communist bit that was run by the communists.
Yeah, that was in Munich. They took over the government for a few days at least. But they were wiped out eventually. And in Secret Masonic Episode 2, I cover this, and the leader of, again, this is a British documentary I'm using, the leader is called Eugene Levine, who his son, Levine Jr., talks about his father, said he died bravely, and as he was shot, executed, he shouted out, "Long live the World Revolution." And then the documentary goes on to say that most of this Republic leaders were Jewish. And Luxembourg and Liebknecht were leaders of the German Communist Party formed at the end of 1918. So he was a Marxist, you know, if he wasn't Jewish, he had everything else going for him. And he was put to death.
Rosa Luxemburg was obviously a Jewess. Yes, that's quite well known. And just, what was the word you said there? Levi?
Liebknecht, isn't it?
No, the other one that you were saying with it had...
Levine.
Levine. That's a Jewish name because it's got Levi in it.
Yeah, well, he was the leader of that particular government, the Munich Soviet government, they call it.
Yeah.
Or Reichenberg Republic.
That's a Jewish name as well. So they're all Jews involved in that. So
I don't think that's disputable.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't disproved that Jewish elements tried to overthrow the German government. He hasn't come up with anything.
It wasn't a Jewish revolution. I mean, they're all Jewish revolutions, as the documentary goes on to explain, you know, Masonic documentary.
And the Social Democrats, were there Jews involved in that, do you know?
Well, Hitler always looked at them as communists in sheep clothing. I mean, she's a Social Democrat, leader of Germany, what's she called?
Merkel.
Merkel, she's a communist.
Yeah, so we can see just the way that the Social Democrats are now. You can see that they are beholden to Jews. It was the same back then. So he's failed with that one. Yeah. Claim number four, Jews made up 2% of Germany's population, but made up 50% of the media, 70% of judges, and nearly 100% of the banking system. He says this is an unsourced claim. Therefore, as the Hitchens razor goes, what can be asserted without evidence can be dismissed. without evidence. So where did you get those statistics from, Dennis?
Well, the guy was Swiss. I failed to get his name, but he was in the documentary talking, and he actually said, before you criticise the Germans for what they did to the Jews, you've got to realise what the Jews did to Germany. And although he said, you know, that there's no immediate source, the reason they were kicked out of 100 countries previously and they're doing exactly the same to America now is enough evidence to say that they're quite capable of doing it in Germany.
I believe that was Benjamin Friedman, wasn't it, that was saying that?
Well, he may have said it, but he wasn't. The guy who was saying it in the documentary was a guy from Switzerland, but I can't remember his name. I had it once, but I couldn't get it again.
Yeah, I think Benjamin Friedman has said that in one of his speeches. I could be wrong. I could
wouldn't surprise. Yeah,
could just be thinking of that bit from your head.
Yeah, even in the clip where Hitler is coming back from the war, First World War, in the greatest story, there's some quotes on there from the British Prime Minister at the time having a go at the Jews, saying that they were running around like monarchs and untouchable. So it was pretty well known then.
There are also statistics at the Institute for Historical Review, which I guess would bear this out. I mean, the Jews were 2% of Germany's population. I'm sure I've seen expanded statistics, not just, you know, they were the media and the judges, but to do with the chemists there as well, to do with the doctors, to do with education. The same as it is now, where Jews are vastly overrepresented in absolutely everything.
That's right.
It's a shame it is unsourced, but obviously there are sources for it. Yeah, it has a point there. We all need to be careful with our sources and to say, you know, where the sources for this information are, so people can go and check it out for themselves. We don't want people just to, you know, like you said last week, Dennis, we don't want people just to hear what we say and repeat it. We want people to go and discover what we're saying is the truth for themselves.
So I'm sure they'll find, you know, the source will say exactly what we've put.
Yeah, you've got to have some integrity. You don't want to look foolish when you're arguing this stuff. Claim number.
He hasn't supplied a source yet, by the way.
Pardon?
He hasn't supplied a source yet.
No, he isn't providing a source, but I mean, he's saying because you haven't provided one, I don't need to provide one, and you know that
that's
is
fair enough, then.
That is, you know, that is an argument.
I can use America as an example of how they manipulate to take over countries.
I mean, that is an argument, but I mean, we are providing sources now. The Institute for Historical Review, Benjamin Friedman, and the Swiss chap that you were saying there that you can't remember his name. Perhaps that will come to you at some point. Claim 6, and this is quite a complicated one, so I've split it up into a few different subheadings after I'll go through the paragraph. He says, Hitler's invasion of Poland was justified because Poland was being genocidal towards ethnic Germans in its territories. Wrong. The event alleged in TGSNT as the Danzig Massacre is a hoax. What Dennis Wise is most likely referring to is rather an event known as Bloody Sunday, which took place in Bromberg, today the city of Bydgoszcz, and firstly happened 3 days after the German invasion of Poland, and secondly, many of the involved Volksdeutsch were in reality part of a poorly trained pro-Nazi paramilitary force called the Selbstschutz, who attacked the organised Polish army during the German invasion and got their shit wrecked out of them as a result. When the Wehrmacht came across this, they reported their deaths back to Nazi leadership in Germany, who used it for propaganda purposes to justify their invasion of Poland that had already begun via the false flag Gliwice incident and subsequent reprisals against the Polish populace once the nation was erased from the world map for the next 6 years and turned into a new entity known as the General Government. So we've got quite a few there. He's saying that the Danzig Massacre was a hoax, is the first thing that he says, and he says that what you're probably referring to is Bloody Sunday, Dennis. So was it Bloody Sunday you were referring to? And no, what do you have to say about this?
I know Bromberg after the invasion, and they've always used that as an excuse ever since, but in the episode 18. We go through that with the white paper and everything else. And it all shows that there were the actual refugees, the German refugees were on the border 6 months before Bromberg because they were being targeted.
Millions of them. I think millions of them were on the border, or millions had actually passed through as refugees over the last few years. And there were these horrific attacks that were on Germans with the, you know, the eyes gouged out and everything else. I think in that white paper it says that, that was seen before they went into Poland. That was why it was such so acute that they needed to get this sorted out and stopped.
Correct. And of course, Hitler mentioned that any pilot which was downed wasn't given, you know, as a prisoner of war, but was had his eyes gouged out. Another typical Bolshevik type atrocities happened, which he doesn't discuss neither.
So the next bit he gets into is this Selbstschutz, whatever it is. It says there's a poorly trained pro-Nazi paramilitary force who attacked the Polish army during the German invasion, and they were the ones that were attacked. And I guess where he's saying that they got the shit wrecked out of them, I guess that means, they were the ones that had their testicles cut off and their eyelids, you know, sliced off and all these horrible tortures.
But I'd be hard-pressed. I mean, I've never heard, to be honest, that's the truth, but I'd be hard-pressed to find an ill-trained Nazi paramilitary army, especially at that time.
Good point. Obviously, the ethnic Germans would have been sympathetic to the other Germans that were coming in to rescue them because they'd had all these horrific things done to them. Don't forget, it wasn't just these physical tortures. They weren't allowed to speak German. They weren't allowed to teach German in their schools. They were only allowed to speak Polish. There was a blockade on Danzig. They couldn't get food in, couldn't get goods out. It was sort of starving them. I mean, that was the reason why he wanted that train line to go there.
That's so right.
They could trade.
He said later on that he made it because he wanted the corridor. That wasn't the fact he wanted the corridor. The very fact that Germany was cut to pieces was an act of genocide. They wanted to take all the parts of Germany overnight, take them into another country, and then de-Germanize them, and then they'd be lost as Germans forever. It was just that's the calculated thing what the Versailles Treaty was, which is why the Germans wouldn't sign it for a year, because they knew what it meant. So he's kind of skipping around all this and using kind of old stuff. Pre the greatest story ever told, which is hardly used these days because of the debunking of it all.
It's kind of like sort of headhunting, isn't it? You know, if we carve off a load of Germans here and a load of Germans there, a certain percentage of them are probably going to be geniuses and very intelligent, and we'll have them for, you know, we'll have them for Poland, we'll have them for Czechoslovakia, we'll have them for, you know, France, and we'll hive them off, and then they'll be, you know, French, German, French and Polish instead of being German. I guess that's
well, they did the same in Michael E. Jones explains in when the war was going on. They did the same in The Slaughter of the Cities, his book, where they brought the blacks in from the south into cities like Chicago and drove what used to be the Italians and the Polish and the Lithuanians, drove them out into the suburbs and suddenly they become white.
Yeah, so they lost their ethnicity. The
same people.
Yeah, they lost their ethnicity. And once you lose your ethnicity, right. You know, you lose that strength. I do have issues with E. Michael Jones when he's against the term white because it's synonymous with European, isn't it? And we are all European.
I don't think he quite sees the link between Germany and Chicago anyway, but he does cite that point that it was going on during the war.
I think he sees things sort of either or, and you know, I think there could be a compromise reached with him. But I think the people that he talks to, a lot of the time, they are too set in their own way of thinking, and he's too set in his own way of thinking. Like when he says, you know, if it wasn't for Christianity, you know, the Africans would have a civilization like Europe. Well, no, they wouldn't. And I don't think Europeans would if it wasn't for Christianity, but it's half and half. It's Christianity plus it's our unique genetics and our ethnicity, and the two together created Christendom. It wasn't one or the other. He sees it as one or the other. Either we're saying it's ethnicity that created it, which he says is wrong, and he says it was Christianity that created it on its own, which, you know, most of us say is wrong. And I think there's like a, you know, it's half and half, but nobody suggests that to him from what I've heard so far out of his podcast.
He does disappoint, but he does bring it up that this kind of work was going on, not just in Europe at the time, or before World War II, certainly after World War II, but during the war in America, the same kind of thinking, same system.
I think he's finding out more about what happened during the war. I think he seems more sympathetic to National Socialism than he was before, which is a good thing. Well, the final bit that he talks about in this Claim 6 is the Gleiwitz incident, which is commonly thought of as being a false flag. Do you want to talk a bit about the Gleiwitz incident?
Well, as far as I can remember, I think Mickey Clark debunked all this. She did an article on it and completely obliterated it. So, you know, to me, it's just an excuse made up to cover the cells again.
Yeah, it wasn't a false flag. I know Carolyn Yeager's looked into that as well. I think it was something to do with the radio station. And an attack on a radio station, and they claimed that the people that attacked it were really Germans dressed up as Poles or something, but it really didn't. Yeah. You know, that was put out as a reason for Germany going into Poland as an excuse for it, but that wasn't anything to do with it.
No.
The white book tells you the reasons why they went into Poland, and the Gleiwitz incident is nothing to do with it. That was a cover story put out by the Allies.
That's why I think that documentary is vital, because it goes into that little bit more depth than the great story did, and shows proof of certain things.
Well, he continues on the Danzig theme. He says, also, Poland never owned Danzig during the pre-war time. It was a free city under administration by the League of Nations. And I'll just stop there. It was full of Germans. That's the point.
Yeah, well, it's full of Germans, but they called it the Free City of Danzig. And what he's saying, it wasn't Polish. What I'm saying is they were doing everything they could to Polonize it. And the League of Nations, Hitler pulled out of the League of Nations as soon as he came to power, because he knew it was a Rothschild invention, just like the UN, straight after World War II. There was no difference. So he knew Germany being in there was no good to anybody. So he pulled them out. And to say that they helped in the situation is an understatement, because the German, I can't remember his name now, went to the League of Nations several times and said, you know, can you help? And he just did nothing. Ribbentrop.
They were supposed to have self-determination. I mean, after the First World War, they said anyone that is a people and ethnicity, they should have self-determination. They should be ruling themselves. They should have a democracy. They should have a vote, la-di-da. And then straight away, you get all these Germans in Danzig that are told, well, you can't have that. You can't have that. Mm-hmm. We're going to call you a free city, and we're going to make it a part of Poland, and we'll say that the administration is under the League of Nations. Well, where's the self-determination there? Where's the autonomy there?
It gets worse, because they built a city further up from Danzig, and so all the imports, what would have gone to Danzig, went to the city further up, which left Danzig, you know, obviously struggling financially.
Well, this is actually breaking the Treaty of Versailles straight off, really. Breaking the terms under which the war was ended, to say, you know, well, everyone can have self-determination, and then actually deny it.
Rights.
Yeah, deny these rights to Germans once...
You're right, isn't it, really?
Yeah, once it's finished.
But he never covers all this. He doesn't mention this other city which was built.
He continues, the war started... He continues, the war started because Hitler wanted the Danzig corridor. And you mentioned something about that a minute ago. When Poland refused to just hand the area over, as had been the case with Czechia ceding the Sudetenland and getting entirely annexed in the progress while the world remained silent, Hitler invaded. That corridor was just supposed to be so that they could get supplies to Danzig. That was the point of
contact
it.
With relatives and things like that. They could, you know, just for a few days meet the family. But obviously the Polish refused. And Germany even offered to pay for the railroad.
If that had been all it was, you know, they would have just continued to negotiate. That wasn't all it was. It was the fact that, you know, there were all these refugees and all these attacks on these Poles. It wasn't just because, you know, he wanted a railroad to them, to have contact with them. That, you know, that was, you know, seen as a solution to these other problems. And what's the bit that he says here about Czechia? As had been the case with Czechia, ceding the Sudetenland and getting entirely annexed in the progress while the world remained silent. Now, was that all Germans again, that just, you know, they wanted to be part of Germany?
In The Greatest Story Ever Told, it shows Hitler in a speech demanding if he does not set them Germans free, then Germany will go set them free themselves. Because they were getting, again, they were being killed in the Sudetenland. Fourth class citizens treated that way. And Hitler wanted to end it. And he told Benedict if he didn't do it, he would invade. But then at the same time, Hitler called for the Munich Agreement to see if they could prevent an invasion. And he brought Mussolini along as well to, you know, be a neutral negotiator, so to speak. And they did come to that conclusion. And they come to an agreement. But the press, the Jewish press back in Britain, obviously abused the Prime Minister when he got back home.
So it was an agreement that it would get annexed then. It was an agreement between Germany and Czechia. Is that what you're saying, that it was an agreement that Germany could have Sudetenland?
Czechoslovakia, after Sudetenland had gone back to Germany, again, where any loss of life, Czechoslovakia itself collapsed. I mean, it was a plastic country anyway. It was made up after World War II. And so there were other countries had land taken from them as well, including Hungary, who took the land back, and Poland took their land back. So Czechoslovakia was made up from various bits of land stolen.
Right. So the bit that was originally belonging to Germany, that went back to Germany. The bit that belonged to Poland went back to Poland. Yeah. The bit that belonged to Hungary went back to Hungary. Well, that's you know, that's not annexing somewhere, is it? Especially if it was part of Germany in the first place.
Because the government fell, Benes, I believe, went to England for safety. There was no other country economically powerful enough to actually take it in hand, because the fear was if nobody could take it in hand, Stalin would. And so Hitler jumped in and took it before Stalin could even get an opportunity.
So in effect, protecting the people there from Bolshevism.
A buffer, yeah.
He continues, Hitler and pals repeatedly stressed the fact that the current status quo regarding the Danzig question was intolerable and untenable, which makes them the biggest hypocrites of all, because South Tyrol had been handed over to Italy after Austria had lost World War I, but Hitler made no efforts to take this German majority land back. And he says, why? Because the Italian dictator Mussolini was his buddy and ally. So really, it wasn't about any kind of noble goal of reuniting German territories under one Reich at all, but simple coercion and power play directed towards the Polish state. But why would Hitler need to go to the South Tyrol if the Germans weren't being oppressed there like they were in Poland?
Exactly.
And if they didn't ask to be part of Germany like Austria did.
Yeah, they're allies, weren't they? I mean, you don't even know if Mussolini said, don't worry, you know, you can have them back soon as you get the chance, whatever. I don't know. But I mean, they weren't under any, they weren't being killed. So
and I think in the South Tyrol, I think you've got Germans and you've got Italians. You know, you've got two ethnic groups in the South Tyrol.
Yeah.
And if the Germans weren't having any problems there, and they're under the administration of Italy, there isn't an issue there. And Austria wanted to become a part of the Reich.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything that says that South Tyrol did. And obviously they were being treated well. So that argument doesn't really stand up there, that he's putting.
Not at all.
I mean, really, it proves the idea that Hitler went into Poland because the Germans in Danzig were being mistreated, because he didn't go into South Tyrol, because it was under Mussolini. Yeah, so they weren't being mistreated.
Correct.
So it proves our position, not his, not Saunders' position. He says, when Czechia handing over the Sudetenland and its subsequent erasure from the world map proved that Hitler could not be sated, and the continued existence of South Tyrol under Italian control proved that Hitler's primary goal wasn't about unifying German territories, historians conclude that the Danzig question was nothing but an excuse to go to war with Poland. Really? Why would Germany want to go to war with Poland? What was the reason for it if it wasn't for Germans being mistreated by Poles?
Well, this thing about historians, we know academia can only say what they're told to say. That's the problem with academia, because if they say anything different, they lose a job. So again, he's using, historians, well, they said it, well, so what?
Well, we've got the white book there. I mean, this Saunders should go and have a look at the white book and see, what the diplomatic documents say, rather than looking at the modern historians. Look closer to the time and closer to the actual people. I mean, if you want to find out the truth of anything, whatever was written closest to the time, closest to the area where the event happened, that carries the most weight, not what people say, 70 years later.
After
1945. Yeah, it's primary evidence has the most weight. Claim 7. Yeah. Hitler offered a 16-point peace plan to Britain after the fall of France, which the warmongering British refused. So that must be a quote. He's quoting from you there, Dennis. The world had learned Hitler's peace offers weren't worth the paper they were written on after what happened with his Munich agreement. So just go through the Munich agreement again there, Dennis. Why is it that people say that his peace offers aren't worth the paper they are written on because of what happened with the Munich agreement?
Because of Poland. They say that it was being appeased all the time, and Poland was the Allies had decided no more appeasement. But I mean, like I said, he actually called for that. He threatened to invade Czechoslovakia, but he actually called for that meeting because he didn't want to, because he knew it could break out into a war. And the same with Poland. He didn't want to invade Poland, as we can tell from the white paper, at least one offer, even his own staff, as the mouth of Sultan, it was so magnanimous. So at the end of it all, he's trying to say that, these peace treaties that Hitler was offering counted for nothing. But my answer to him would be, how many peace offers did the Allies make? None. And when you look at what Churchill said, again, quote, when he was talking to Truman, we didn't want to stop the war. They were warmongering.
He says, every time a revisionist tries acting clever by bringing up Hitler's many peace proposals and asks why they were ignored, answer the question by asking him why Hitler invaded Czechia in 1939, especially considering he had already saved the ethnic German population by annexation of the Sudetenland from that country prior to this. And I think you've explained that. Prevent the Bolsheviks. Hitler's annexation of the rest of non-German Czechia dispels the myth that this man of peace was only trying to expand Germany by its ethnic territory. Munich brought Hitler not only 3 million more citizens, but also the bulk of the Czechoslovakian armaments industry, perhaps the best in the world at the time. In March of 1939, Hitler destroyed Czechoslovakia as a state, thus removing any illusions that his goals were limited to ethnic Germans. And that's Timothy Snyder in Bloodlands. And he says, in any case, the peace plan was shitty because it would effectively give Germany control over all areas it had conquered and make British guarantees to Poland worthless. Well, this was to protect the Czechs from Stalin, and because their state was falling apart.
Europe, to be honest, because it was a doorway to Europe.
Who else was going to go in there and protect them?
Ed.
Finally, claim 8. Hitler's invasion of the Soviet Union was a preemptive strike, unavoidable and necessary, to prevent an imminent full-scale Soviet invasion of Europe. In other words, Stalin was about to backstab the Molotov-Ribbentrop non-aggression pact and invade. But Hitler and the Wehrmacht's heroic deeds saved Western Europe from communism. Dennis Wise attempts to justify Hitler breaking yet another non-aggression pact of 1939 with claims made by bargain bin novel authors Igor Bunik or Viktor Suvorov in Icebreaker, where the claim is that Stalin planned to invade Germany, so Hitler, even though he had been writing since 1924 about pushing German territories towards the east, see Lebensraum, made a preemptive strike. The truth is, at this same time, a completely oblivious Stalin was still sending oil and grains with other resources to Germany and had no reason to break the peace. Well, why was he building up all those tanks then on the border?
Yeah, well, he's got a problem really because, as again, in Masonic Victory, we have US historian James Perloff, who cited that Leonid Brezhnev himself admitted it during the 1970s, and he was a leader of Russia, so he should know. And I cited the information of the planned invasion document, and it was signed by the Chief of Staff, Kirill Mereskov, on the 18th of September 1940, enabling Stalin to invade on the 10th of July 1941. Now, in the documentary, I call it Operation Thunder, but it was actually called Operation Thunderstorm. But the reason I said Thunder, that was the only way you could find it on Wiki at the time, because this is where all that information came from. It was one of these articles which had managed to get through the Zionists on there. And now, if you actually Google the same, the article there, it states that it was a conspiracy theory. But at the actual time, if you Googled Operation Thunder, you got the full information. If you Googled Operation Thunderstorm, you got some of the war at some other time. That's why I called it Operation Thunder, so people could actually go there and research. But like I said, they've changed it now anyway to a conspiracy theory.
Well, it's interesting. He tries to discredit Viktor Suvorov there and then credits this chap Snyder in his book Badlands. I mean, that is totally discredited as well, isn't it? You found that tonight.
Yeah, the website, www.jacobinmag.com. Daniel Lazard does a tremendous job on debunking Timothy Snyder's lies.
Yeah, and the basic upshot of it is that this Timothy Snyder is useful for promoting the narrative today, basically, of Russia being the bad guy.
It's all the war, isn't it? From the New York Times and Wall Street. Tells his story.
Working for the Jews. Well, I think we've shown where the evidence can be found to counter all of this. And I guess we probably need to look into the First World War a little bit more, I would say. You know, because you've got to look at this constructive criticism like this as being constructive, Dennis. You know, put the credits there for where you get your stuff from.
Yeah.
And World War One, we possibly need to look at a little bit more. The beginning.
Well, World War One's a strange one because I don't think anyone realizes why that was fought. And certainly he doesn't mention the fact that Versailles was a Masonic celebration hosted by Lord Rothschild. So there's bits he's unaware of himself.
And it's good that, we can have a look at that and test ourselves and test yourself by trying to debunk it.
Yeah.
You know, I welcome people trying to debunk things that I've said because, you know, it helps you to improve on what you do say and preempt it the next time you talk about it. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis.
Okay.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.